This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Eliminate bags under your eyes in minutes with Instantly Ageless from GCNLife.com.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump is now reportedly supporting another round of stimulus checks for Americans because of the pandemic. That's according to a report in the Washington Post, which adds there is continued opposition by conservatives on Capitol Hill who say it will simply cost too much. Economist Vance Gin, who once worked in Trump's cabinet, says instead of sending people more money, states should just continue to reopen their economies.
The latest state-level jobs report shows that the states that are opening up faster, like Texas, are having more job creation than places that are a little bit slower in their phase-out, like in California.
U.S. Senate Democrats say they plan to block a vote on a Republican police reform bill today, calling it a half-baked effort that wouldn't really address police violence in America. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Heavy rains that have been hammering America's south won't be going anywhere for a while, according to forecasters, who say a stalling cold front will mean the storms will move very slowly, dumping a lot more rain. They say Jackson, Mississippi can expect 2 to 3 inches of rain over the next 24 hours, and even heavier rainfall is likely from the Texas Gulf Coast to New Orleans and into parts of southeastern Mississippi and southwestern Alabama. The Fox comedy hit Brooklyn Nine-Nine is dumping the first 4 episodes of its new season. The star of the police sitcom, Terry Crews, saying that they'll toss those scripts out so they can start again to reflect America's changing social landscape. Producers and cast members making the decision to take into account the protests recently over racial injustice after the police custody death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Stocks are lower on Wall Street so far this morning, and this is USA Radio News.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Protesters in the nation's capital planning to gather in Lincoln Park on Thursday of this week, saying they will tear down the Emancipation Statue. The controversial monument shows President Abraham Lincoln standing over a slave. Thousands of Americans have signed a petition calling for its removal, arguing that it fails to make the point that enslaved blacks fought for their own emancipation. Hundreds of protesters rallied and chanted near the statue last evening. 2 human rights organizations are going to court in an effort to stop Iowa's 24-hour waiting period for abortions, recently approved by the state's legislature. Planned Parenthood of the Heartland and a doctor represented by the American Civil Liberties Union filing lawsuits late yesterday. It's in anticipation that Republican Governor Kim Reynolds will be signing that bill. And rocker Sammy Hagar says he's willing to perform during the coronavirus pandemic, even if it means he dies. The former Van Halen singer was recently asked by Rolling Stone how he was dealing with the pandemic, and he said that he'd be comfortable playing a show before there is a vaccine if the pandemic was declining. Then he added, "I'd rather personally get sick and even die if that's what it takes to get back on stage." Find us online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
If you're living with diabetes and using insulin, you know the pain of pricking your fingers over and over again. Ouch! Well, by wearing a small remote device called a continuous glucose monitor, or CGM, you can reduce the pain of pricking your fingers. Here's what our customers had to say.
Painless. No more pricking my finger.
No finger pricks.
Convenience. They delivered it free, and they took care of all the paperwork.
If you're testing your blood sugar four or more times per day, injecting insulin three or more times per day, or using an insulin pump, a CGM can help you. It's accurate, easy to use, and if you have Medicare, you can get a new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Plus, get free shipping of your new CGM, and we can bill Medicare for you.
Honestly, I had my doubts, but that new CGM is painless.
Call now. 800-471-7065. 800-471-7065. 800-471-7065. That's 800-471-7065.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
We're back with you, America. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. It's always great to have you along with us, sharing a part of your day. For more information on the show, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com. Daniel Halpert joins us now. We're going to be talking about his new book that he and Alana Goodman have written. They're bringing original reporting, unprecedented access to the examination of the official story of the death that has captivated the public and left many unanswered questions. Importantly, did Jeffrey Epstein really kill himself? Daniel, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, congratulations on the book, A Convenient Death, The Mysterious Demise of Jeffrey Epstein. This is a story that even to this day, I mean, I'm reading where there's been sightings of Jeffrey Epstein, that he's really not dead, that he's alive and well in South America, I guess.
Yeah, there. Listen, it's attracted a lot of conspiracy theories and a lot of interest, but for a very really good reason. There's a lot we don't know about Jeffrey Epstein. We try to get to this, and we try to explain how it is that he lived, and importantly, how he died. Mm-hmm. The last few months, the last few weeks, the last few days, what led up to it. We've been stonewalled along the way. The federal government refuses to answer questions. They refuse to put out the details of their alleged investigation into this. And I think, you know, like we see in much else in the world, the fact is when there aren't clear answers, people come up with their own.
Exactly.
And it's a very fascinating story about sort of how people work and how the elite power structures in America work as well.
You know, that's consistent with what we, you know, mantra on this show, that in the absence of fact, opinion rules, and there's lots of opinions, and of course, because of this, then, you know, it seems to be that powers and forces in our government are such, are happy to have the people, you know, wearing tinfoil hats and accused of being conspiratorial.
But look, there are a lot of those people in power could shed some light on this, right?
Mm-hmm. But, yes.
You know, Donald Trump was friends with Jeffrey Epstein. It'd be interesting to hear what he has to say. Bill Clinton, we know, was very, very good friends with Jeffrey Epstein, pretty close to him. He had to tap for interviews and had to explain who he is and about these things. So you sort of see that people in power across American leadership have allowed this thing to fester by their own silence. But again, when Jeffrey Epstein died in a Manhattan prison cell run by federal officials, the attorney general said that he was outraged and that clearly things had gone wrong, and he called on for an investigation. But where are the results of that investigation? We don't know. They won't release them. We know, based on victim testimonial, that Jeffrey Epstein did not act alone, that there was a lot of co-conspirators, that there were people who we know, who we have direct knowledge of, who acted acted on his behalf, at his behest, who participated allegedly in some of these crimes. You know, where's the FBI in this? They're too busy. They're too busy taking down Michael Flynn to sort of focus on this.
Right.
And I think that these are serious questions. And again, it is about Jeffrey Epstein, but it's also about sort of who we are, what we stand for, and how our government is operating at the moment, and it's kind of distressing.
Well, you identify a key point, and this is what we talk about in our show right now, is that all it takes is a little bit of deception and lies, you know, to corrupt the whole batch here, and we either are going to pursue the truth and understand and truly be followers and those who are committed to the rule of law or not. You just can't parcel this out. Our country continues to be, you know, wrapped in mystery, whether it has to do still with the JFK assassination and now Jeffrey Epstein, and Epstein just really sticks out so blatantly. Daniel, how were you able, I mean, being shut down by all these immediate forces that you think should be pretty academic to get information from them, but then you realize, hey, we're being blocked here. So how do you get the information? You've got to use non-traditional ways to come up with some evidence here.
So we did. We talked very extensively about with like some of his lawyers and some people who were actually very close to him. And I think we do a pretty good job of sort of understanding what Jeffrey Epstein was thinking the last few weeks and few days and few hours. And I was kind of surprised because, A, the closer we get, the people tend to believe that he wasn't, that he didn't commit suicide, that he was probably murdered. And B, Jeffrey Epstein, it seems, was pretty optimistic about his future. I know it seems strange to perhaps consider, but given his predicament in a Manhattan prison cell. But Jeffrey Epstein, his whole life, he was a con man.
Yes, exactly.
He used his power. He used his money to buy his way into power. And he didn't even have as much money as people thought. He used a perception of these things to buy his way into politics, academia, the media. And he had anchors coming over to his house. He was close with Bill Clinton. He had an office at Harvard. He used those things to get his way. And even at the end, Jeffrey Epstein thought he never did anything wrong, nothing. He thought that he had a very compelling legal case to get out of it. Remember, he had served time, although very lightly, and like a slap on the wrist back in Florida.
Florida,
but
right.
The feds, when they did bring charges against him last year, they brought charges based on those crimes that he had already served time for, that he believed legally that he had served. So they were going to use a double jeopardy argument. Whether or not that would have worked because of the state versus federal laws remains to be seen. But, of course, he was optimistic as a person, which, again, it leads you to believe, like, how many people do you know that are optimistic about the future really off themselves?
Exactly.
It's harder to make the case to find evidence that Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide than it is to find evidence that he was murdered.
Right, exactly. Regarding his personality as well, understood that he was also a very charming guy. And he hung around people that were equally charming, whether it was Bill Clinton or Prince Andrew, a long list of people that traveled and used their charm as a kind of an economic form, I guess.
Aren't the best con men charming? Aren't they?
Yes.
Aren't you sort of your most successful if you're able to convince people that you're for real? By all accounts, Jeffrey Epstein was charming. He was also, by all accounts, very smart. He was quick on his feet, and he was good with numbers. He was good at advising, apparently, to various tax dodges or a way to lower your tax burden. But he also wasn't a variety of things. Like, he would always tell people that he was a money manager to the ultra wealthy and to billionaires, but he wasn't a money manager. He didn't run. I mean, like, if you're a rich guy and you have billions of dollars and you actually have a money manager, they're making trades every day and they're, you know, it's like a full-time job and you have like staff and it's like a complicated thing.
Right.
He wasn't doing that.
You don't have time to go flying on the Lolita Express, because your whole job is managing that guy's portfolio, right?
Exactly, and that's not what he was doing. But he did very clearly have something over these people. He had he was able to captivate them for a variety of ways. One is charm, one is money or the perception of money, and he did have a lot. Certainly by my standards or by most normal people's standards. And you know, perhaps some of it was also blackmail.
I want to talk about that. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to focus in on that a little bit more, too. Daniel Halpert is with us, and the conversation will continue after this. Stay with us.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Attention homeowners that have ever had a broken appliance. That's a joke, right? We've all had broken appliances. I own a home just like you, and have found a way for as little as a dollar a day to have all the major appliances in my home on a warranty plan. They're guaranteed to be fixed or replaced. You know how expensive an air conditioner, the heating system, a washing machine, dryer, water heater, or refrigerator can be. For about a dollar a day, all your major appliances are protected in case they break. Unless you're Daddy Warbucks or the Monopoly guy and you don't care about money, call my friends at the Home Service Club now and get a warranty on your major appliances. It's a free call, and the first month is free. But be one of the first 25 people to call within the next 10 minutes.
800-825-6796. 800-825-6796. 800-825-6796. Again, that's 800-825-6796.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Why have thousands of aspiring authors teamed up with Christian Faith Publishing to publish their book? Because Christian Faith Publishing is an author-friendly publisher who understands that your labor is more than just a book. We provide authors freedom and flexibility throughout the publishing process, professional book editing, award-winning design, and some of the highest royalty structures in the publishing industry. And as always, you will retain 100% of the rights to your book.
I was looking to find a company that I could trust, one that assisted in the editing process completely.
The most important qualities that I was looking for was a publisher who was honest and upfront. No hidden costs or fees, and owning the rights to my own work.
Christian Faith Publishing will publish, market, and sell your books in all major bookstores, online booksellers, as well as specialty Christian bookstores. Call for your free author submission kit.
800-978-4811. 800-978-4811. 800-978-4811. That's 800-978-4811.
Attention! This is a public notice from the Social Security Disability Helpline. If you're one of the millions of Americans who are disabled and unable to work, you may be eligible for disability benefits from Social Security. Receiving benefits is your right. If you suffer from physical or mental disability, whether you're applying for the first time or you've already been denied, we can help. We'll evaluate your situation and deal with Social Security on your behalf. Best of all, there's no fee until you receive your benefits. Remember, we only get paid if you win your case. There are many reasons and conditions that may make you eligible for disability benefits. Many of them you may not be aware of. So if you're disabled and unable to work, call now to get started with your free, no-obligation consultation.
800-368-0123. 800-368-0123. That's 800-368-0123.
Oh, you needn't have worried. I trust your taste in the delicious. Thank you.
Bill Martinez, live.
As promised, back with you, fresh and independent. We are Bill Martinez here as we come to you Monday through Friday, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. Daniel Halpert continues with us. He and Alana Goodman have written a new book, A Convenient Death, A Mysterious Demise of Jeffrey Epstein, where we have more questions than answers right now. And I'll tell you what you and Alana have done, Daniel, have answered many of these questions, and you're bringing into focus a better understanding. You started to touch on before we went to the break about, maybe blackmail or information on people that, these powerful people didn't want out there. And he was the keeper of those keys.
Yeah, well, we know by many, many accounts that he had all his properties, and he had numerous of them, and they were lavish and nice. They were very well, and he had a lot of rich and famous guests come very frequently, a lot of names that you and I have heard of. Mm-hmm. They were all sort of wired with video cameras, and he was able to sort of, by all accounts, have a good sense of what was going on and perhaps capture images of people in compromised situations that he was then able to hold over their head. So, Jeffrey, again, for me, what I found most surprising, I'm not very conspiratorial, so I came at this thinking, well, who knows, maybe it was a suicide, but I came with closer to thinking that he was a murderer, but we leave it open for viewers to make their own decision in the book, mm-hmm. Just laying out the facts, but I also just, again, I think he's just a big con man, and I think if you like a good con man story, I mean, or are sort of blown away by one, this, and it has a lot of victims, and it's sad, but it's certainly mysterious, too.
Yeah. Well, Michael Bodden, who's been on the show, and you've heard his testimony as well, says that it points to a homicide, not to a suicide. But all that hangs out there, again, in the absence of fact and conclusion, the mystery continues. Now, you also talked with former MCC prison guards and the chief psychologist who cast doubt on the official suicide. You kind of referenced the psychologist earlier, but what were the prison guards telling you?
Listen, his personality and the way he presented himself and carried himself, he wasn't really well liked in the prison, but everybody sort of knew who he was, and he was sort of throwing around money. He was there in survival mode, right? So he mm-hmm. was using his money to fill out the commissary accounts of other prisoners there. He was using his power there to sort of gain favor. And some of the prison guards didn't really like him also for other things. He had lawyers coming all the time, and he would sort of dominate these conference rooms that were supposed to be shared by other people. So he did draw a lot of scrutiny. You know, it's funny because you're in prison, so you sort of had this perception that people are locked off. But it's our understanding that people knew who he was very, very well. And he did have a target on his back. You know, he was probably, this is the MCC where he was held in Manhattan, very prominent. You know, it's people like Michael Avenatti, mm-hmm. El Chapo, the mobsters, people are held there. Very famous people tend to be held there who are mm-hmm. picked up in Manhattan. And he was probably the most famous guy at the prison at the time. And you would think, given his scenario, given what everybody knew about him, that there would be a distinct effort to keep him alive, and somehow at the end of the day he ends up dead, and that is shocking by itself.
Without a doubt. You spoke with his brother, Mark. What did he tell you?
He doubts the official story. Doesn't think he was murdered. I mean, doesn't think he committed suicide. I think he tends to think that he was murdered, and he's the one who hired Baden to try to discover the truth. You know, that's, of course, another element, that all the physical evidence points to a strangulation rather than a suicide, hanging. Mm-hmm. And that is another element. You know, you go into, like, the New York City Medical Examiner, when they did the autopsy, their initial conclusion was that it was inconclusive, that they weren't sure how he had died. Mm-hmm. And somehow, mysteriously, a couple of days later, they changed their view to make it a final determination as a suicide by hanging. So that, too, deserves blaming themselves, why they changed themselves. And since they're not, it's allowed for conspiracy theories to flourish.
Exactly. Not to mention, leading up to it, he was beat up. He was accosted in his cell, you know, and got pretty well pummeled there. And then somehow, you know, he's on a high supervisory, you know, position in terms of, you know, suicide watch, I believe, some sort of suicide watch or derivative. And, you know, they fail to look in on him. And also during that process, he's not supposed to have linen, you know, his paper linen or paper, you know, like mattress covers and stuff like that, not linen. But somehow conveniently linen is there. I mean, this is all, you know, all these things coming together. This is what leaves us with more questions, right?
Yeah, listen, to buy into the suicide theory, you have to basically believe that all of those things that you laid out, plus more, plus, you know, video camera footage going missing and, you know, guards allegedly falsifying information. You have to believe that all those are just coincidences that sort of worked in his favor, rather than the opposite, which is that it was all part of something to have him diminished.
Or taken out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Taken out. And right. So it's like, well, what do you want to believe? You want to believe this, like, complex theory that he wanted to off himself, even though it's not really in his personality, or do you want to believe what seems more likely to be true, which is that, you know, Jeffrey Epstein took matters into his own hands.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, sorry, that somebody else benefited by taking matters into their own hands.
Right. Well, and as you touched on earlier as well, Daniel, and we've got a couple of minutes left here, in looking down and just analyzing the final days of his life, in questioning, you know, the motive and, you know, what could possibly have, you know, or be entering, what possibly could he be entertaining to want to commit suicide when there was no signal, there was no indication of that, including Doug Schoen, his lawyer and friend. I didn't even realize that Doug Schoen was a friend of Epstein's.
Yeah, he was going to be his final lawyer. They had been talking, and according to the, he now lives in Georgia, the lawyer, that Epstein was very optimistic, and they had a pretty good legal strategy. It's kind of interesting to hear, because you assume, and we know obviously, that a lot of victims have spoken out and they have said what Epstein did to them and what some of his co-conspirators did to them. So you kind of think, well, he didn't really have a shot, and maybe, you know, he sort of lacked any sort of foresight that he might be out, but not the case. His lawyers and Jeffrey Epstein were pretty optimistic that they knew that Jeffrey Epstein was a household name, that people hated him, that he was reviled, and that they had public opinion against them. But legally, they thought they had a pretty good shot of him getting out of prison. Mm-hmm. And that, again, that he had this optimism at the end of his life, inconsistent with somebody who is going to commit
suicide. Also in the book, you point out new information about Epstein's access to Bill Clinton in the White House.
Yeah, that's right. He was closer to Epstein, Bill Clinton, that is, as early as the 1990s. Now, we also talked to somebody who witnessed his relationship with Bill Clinton's relationship with Ghislaine Maxwell, that he was actually very close with Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein's former girlfriend, who also, on the record, has been accused of being essentially a co-conspirator in these crimes, that she has been alleged to have procured these young women and taken advantage of them. And yet this is somebody who Bill Clinton is very close with. He hasn't answered questions about their relationship, and he hasn't explained why she was at his daughter's wedding. Mm-hmm. This goes to the top levels of American government. Epstein was a man who was able to get his way, get in the halls of power. And just reading this book, I think people have an understanding of sort of how elites play by different rules. They get different things than the rest of us, and that, you know, how this sick power structure can benefit somebody else. And I think at the end, you're maybe left wondering how many more Jeffrey Epsteins are out there.
Exactly. Daniel, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
You hear the headlines. You know health insurance is a real mess right now. Premiums have skyrocketed, and in most cases, you're stuck with your plan until open enrollment. But there's a government rule that allows you to qualify for lower health insurance rates if your life has changed. That means if you've changed jobs, if you're having a child, if you're getting married, if you're getting divorced, even if you run a small business or you're self-employed, this law may qualify you to get lower health insurance rates. Call the health insurance hotline today. Learn how this 10-minute call can help you get lower health insurance rates. This is a free service to help consumers learn the laws to help them qualify for lower health insurance rates. So call right now to learn more.
800-610-3630. 800-610-3630. 800-610-3630. That's 800-610-3630. Paid for by GoHealth.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump is now reportedly supporting another round of stimulus checks for Americans because of the pandemic. That's according to a report in the Washington Post, which adds there is continued opposition by conservatives on Capitol Hill who say it will simply cost too much. Economist Vance Gin, who once worked in Trump's cabinet, says instead of sending people more money, states should just continue to reopen their economies.
The latest state-level job report shows that the states that are opening up faster, like Texas, are having more job creation than places that are a little bit slower in their phase-out, like in California.
U.S. Senate Democrats say they plan to block a vote on a Republican police reform bill today, calling it a half-baked effort that wouldn't really address police violence in America. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
Bill Martinez, we have a country to save.
And I gotta tell you, it's not as difficult as some would make it to be. I mean, I think it's a good thing that this is happening. I mean, in a sense that, people are declaring themselves and, finally expressing their problems. I mean, in some cases, this stuff has been pent up for a long time. You know, some of these emotions, I mean, the way it's being expressed, yeah, we could talk about some of the vigilanteism that is taking place. That's not good. Breaking the rule of law, not good. But look, there's a reasonable way in which we can resolve conflict, and maybe that's what we need, is an orchestrated some mass conflict resolution. What do you think? Okay, well, as you ponder on that, I'm going to tell you why I believe this to be the case, because our next guest, Misha Malecki, joins us, and she has written a book called The Conflict Resolution Grail, and because, as I said, conflict defines almost every moment of our lives, but many people aren't even aware of their own conflict resolution behaviors. So what is your conflict personality? Do you know you have a conflict personality? Well, we're going to talk about that. And how can we learn to be more assertive in any situation, assertive and fair and still loving, so that after it's all said and done, we're not complicating the process by being rude, and then we have other reasons to resolve in the process of trying to heal the situation. Misha Malecki, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you very much for having me.
As you can tell, I've had a couple of conflict resolution experiences in my life, and I have learned, in some cases, the hard way. I'm not sure what my conflict personality is. However, I will say that sometimes it gets convoluted and gets, you know, compromised. And, you know, in a greater way, I don't know, you get unintended consequences and confusion brought in the process because, you know, I think the bottom line is that we don't want the conflict. We really want to get this resolved, you know, for the most part. I mean, there's some people who just, you know, they're stuck in conflict, so there's no helping them. But for those of us that want to believe in the goodness of the other person and resolving conflict, you know, I like what you say. It really starts with ourselves, doesn't it?
Yes, without a doubt. First of all, Bill, I must say I'm quite impressed by your own awareness about conflict. I think you sort of summed it up very well yourself. But without a doubt, it starts with ourselves, and that is why the triangle on the cover of my book, which has three dimensions to conflict resolution, one being awareness, one being compassion, and one being the toolbox and negotiator's toolbox, mm-hmm. is there. Because the prerequisite to effective conflict resolution is self-awareness, and what you described as the personality behaviors when it comes to conflict situations, that's where it starts. And we all sort of have a good sense of what that is for us, but mm-hmm. we don't sort of consciously think about it. We are programmed, I believe, as children to think of conflict a certain way, and we watch our parents resolve conflict very unskillfully around us, and mm-hmm. we're sort of taught in this framework of, well, it's either got to be passive or aggressive, and we aren't sort of taught any other way, and that's how we grow up to be. And mm-hmm. most people fear conflict situations because they don't know how to deal with it effectively, but as you also identified, conflict is all around us. It's inevitable, so let's get very skillful at resolving it, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, you know, there is a problem. When there's a problem, it needs to get solved.
Exactly.
You have to solve it, and you have to deal with the underlying toxic emotions. Mm-hmm. You know, otherwise, they will affect your own well-being. They will affect the well-being of the person on the other side, and sort of when you look at it collectively, the well-being of the entire humanity. So conflict is nothing that we must fear. It is actually quite easy once you learn the tools and once you become conscious of your own style. And something else that you touched upon, conflict is fluid. We, you know, our predominant style of conflict resolution behavior varies across context. You may be the accommodator with your mother, but you may be, you know, the avoider with your husband and the aggressor with your child. I don't know, but it is fluid. That being said, we each do emanate a predominant style of conflict resolution behavior, and once we identify it, we become more skillful because then we have choice-making behavior. At any point in time, I can say to myself, and all of these, let me just be straight about this, all of these five styles have their benefits. They can all advantage us to a certain degree. I may choose to be the avoider, and I mean, you know, as a lawyer, I'm strategic and high approach problem solving, and, you know, just the other day, you know, I told a client that we can't be surfacing, and the other side, the spouse shouldn't know that he's retained lawyers because there was something that I needed to get done before I surfaced. Mm-hmm. So there is a benefit to, you know, all of these styles, and you have to be strategic about it. And the more you know about it, the more liberating it becomes, and the less you start to fear conflict situations.
Exactly. And the other thing is the result. The result is win-win at the end of the day. It's not at the other's expense necessarily. At least that's my approach and what I would look at. So basically, what you're saying, because of the fluidity of our conflict personalities, it would probably be wise when we're met with a conflict is not to react immediately.
That's right, and the question becomes, how do you increase the gap between stimulus and response? And for that, you need to learn emotional skills, mm-hmm. Because, you know, and that's why the mindfulness and the awareness comes in, because the more you are able to stay in that gap and respond rather than react, respond intelligently, the more awareness you bring to it, the more able you are when you're sort of in the heat of conflict to respond appropriately, mm-hmm. to choose the right response.
And there's some personalities that just want you to engage. They go absolutely ballistic, Mesha, when you're not willing to engage, when you stay in that gap, as you say, to get your footing, to get understanding, to do an inner assessment. moment of where you are and, you know, to pause for just a moment, that can be very debilitating and angry-making for the other party, right?
Absolutely, and that's why part of it is not to only become aware of your own conflict resolution style, but to be able to then identify it. What's going on the other side? How is the other side behaving, and how can I invite them back to the game of assertion? So, for instance, one of the examples, just to distill this down for people, is if you have an aggressive personality behavior when it comes to conflict situations, and the other side is an avoider, well, you're not going to get much problem solving. The more you dial up your assertion, the more you are aggressive, they're just going to retreat.
Exactly.
You're not going to be able to get to the problem solving. So once you identify the other side as being the avoider and yourself as being the aggressor, you tone down the assertion, you increase the empathy in order to get to a deal. And the more empathy that you display strategically, even if your predominant style is to be an aggressor, the more you're able to engage the other side in the conversation and get to problem solving.
Give us an example. What does that sound like?
The example that I just gave you with my recent client, that mm-hmm. was an example of, you know, you're always expecting the other side certainly in the legal context to be more on the aggressive side. So by sitting back, retreating, strategically being avoidant, I'm hoping that there would be, you know, the action step that I'm hoping would be taken by the other side.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm looking for is more communication. What does that
Yes.
sound like when we communicate with the other person so that we raise the level of empathy, as you say, and I like how you phrase that, raise the level of empathy, and basically, maybe in their eyes, maybe for them to look at you as being vulnerable. Does that make sense?
I see. Well, yes, and I mean, absolutely, because, you know, much of conflict resolution, and there's a chapter on trust in the book mm-hmm. that talks about this. You need to build trust. And, you know, for instance, in the line of work that I have, you know, these two people who once loved each other are now arch enemies.
Yes.
And there's a lack of trust. And I even talk in the book about how you can build procedural trust even when there's sort of interpersonal trust is missing. But to your point, so what you need to do is you need to, first of all, build trust as part of that conversation. And you do it through showing empathetic behavior. And there are different techniques, and I talk about them in the book, sort of the how-to of empathy. There's an entire chapter devoted to empathy. There are three levels of empathy, the most common one being cognitive empathy, where you simply reflect back to the person what you heard. Mm. You reflect back what their concerns are, and you make them feel that they're being heard.
Well, we've got to go to break. We've got to go to a quick break. More from Maisha after this. Stay with us.
Is a national campaign aimed at the education and awareness of the devastating effects of opioid and heroin abuse and curbing drug and alcohol addiction in the United States. Recover Now is sponsored by treatment facilities nationwide. Many of them have been where you are, and they want to help by spreading a message of hope and recovery. They're working hand in hand with major insurance companies nationwide that can help you or a loved one get clean in 7 to 30 days. Recover Now is embarking on a national outreach campaign on TV and radio to promote anti-addiction messages. So if you, a loved one, or someone you know has a problem with drugs or alcohol, do not wait. A new life for you could be 30 days away. Call us right now. I promise this call can change your life. Sponsored by the Detox and Treatment Helpline.
800-493-4620. 800-493-4620. That's 800-493-4620.
Has someone in your family lost a job recently? And now you can't afford your mortgage payment? Or do you have a rental property and your tenants aren't paying you? Quick Cash Offer can come to the rescue and pay you cash for your home immediately. Yes, sell your home and get cash all over the phone without dealing with real estate agents and risking your safety by showing your home to lukewarm buyers. You don't need to lose your home to foreclosure. If you have any equity in your home, we will buy it and give you cash within days, all in a simple over-the-phone and virtual process. Call Quick Cash Offer now, before the economy gets worse. Sell a home you can't afford or just don't want to get the cash you need today.
800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. 800-470-7113.
That's 800-470-7113.
Today, many of us are paying attention to our health, and what we eat plays an important role. But so often, the water we drink is a mere afterthought when it should be a primary part of our daily nutrition. Real Water would like to change how you think about the water you drink and how it can play an important role in helping your body restore balance and reach its full potential. The key benefits of every bottle of Real Water are stabilized negative ions, balanced pH, detoxification, and it hydrates you like never before. And yes, it tastes great. Real Water is beyond alkalinity, and due to its proprietary process called E2 technology, it's the only drinking water on the market that can maintain a stable negative ionization, which means real science in every bottle. Order your Real Water today and take advantage of special pricing for this audience only by calling 1-855-REALWTR or visiting buyrealwaternow.com. That's 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com. Order now. 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Values, faith, service, they still exist here. Bill Martinez, live.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, big voice. I hope you're getting a lot out of this. I'll tell you, this is really has captured my attention, what Major Malecki is sharing with us from her brand-new book, The Conflict Resolution Grail. And I still, in my heart of hearts, want to believe that most people do not want, you know, go walking around with conflict. I mean, talk about a heavy anchor that you're dragging along with you when you have this conflict. And God forbid this conflict continues with somebody you're married to, right, Major? I mean, not a whole lot of fun. You might want to double check your dinner that's being served up to you if you continue to carry around this kind of unresolved conflict. Kidding.
Well, that's exactly right. Well, but I mean, you know, Bill, that's what it is. And I think, like, you know, the same way when you go to a doctor, they say half the problem is solved when the doctor is able to properly diagnose what the issue is. It's the same way with conflict resolution. So the more you become skillful, the less afraid of it you become. For instance, I just recently wrote an article for Thrive Global that talks about the issue of boundaries, and it was also in my, there's a chapter in my book about that. But for instance, you know, the husband may say to the wife that he wants to spend some time with the boys on the weekend, and the wife may think, well, that's not appropriate. A married man with two kids should spend all of his time with his family over the weekend. And then a conflict ensues, and then essentially what happens, one or the other will win. And if the one who wins always ends up getting her way or his way, essentially over time a lot of resentment is built. Trust is eroded because one now feels that the other doesn't really care for his or her well-being, and the marriage deteriorates. And, you know, many marriages fall, you know, they fall apart exactly for these types of reasons. But the minute you diagnose this as a boundary issue, two people having different expectations around an issue, you can solve the problem. So you can actually say to your spouse, what is this all about? What's your expectation? What's mine? And perhaps you can come up with a solution that, for instance, may be that both of them get to do family time on the weekends, but each of them can take some time off with the boys or the girls during the week. So, you know, that's sort of the benefit of being conscious about these tools, is that you can apply them to your everyday life. life. You dispel the destructive emotions. You don't let resentment get built to a point where it's too late. You can't do anything about it. And now, you know, you've lost your marriage. You've lost a friendship or whatever else the case may be.
Exactly. Well, you brought up something in the previous segment about trust. And somehow in the current vernacular and culture, we're very casual with trust. We don't realize how important it is. I mean, it is absolutely foundational to every relationship, whether it's business, a marriage. I mean, go right on down the line. I mean, if trust is bankrupt, and depending on the level of bankruptcy that it experiences, this could be devastating.
Without a doubt, trust is fundamental to our relationships. And, you know, I talked about procedural trust simply because procedural trust means even though two people don't trust each other, for instance, when they come to a lawyer or they enter the legal arena or they put their trust in a mediator, they trust that there is still a process that can solve the problem for them. But that's sort of when you're beyond the point where you're able to resolve the conflict amongst yourselves. Otherwise, you need interpersonal trust. And I talk about some tools in the book as to how you can, they're called confidence-building measures, how over time through the display of trust, you know, that trust then gets reciprocated and you can sort of work towards rebuilding trust when it's been eroded. Mm-hmm. But in the first place, trust is something that's so precious and shouldn't be lost.
Without a doubt. I mean, I've heard with some psychologists, Mesha, they have reported that, you know, depending on the breach of trust, you're talking years. You're talking years, and that's almost antithetical to a microwave society that wants an instant fix. And again, that's why I go back and stress the importance of trust, is that when people breach trust in whatever way, and there's all kinds of ways that that can be done, I mean, this is so devastating that before you even, you know, decide to do that, because it is a willful act when you violate trust, before you decide to do that, you might want to count the cost and understand that what you may be entering into could be something that could take you years to recover, because it's not just you, it's the other person, there's family dynamics that come into play as well, right?
Absolutely. It's, you know, I call trust a sub-conversation because we don't always talk about it, but it is one of the fundamental currencies to effective interpersonal relationships, and it is nothing to be taken for granted for. And as you said, if ever you're able to recover from repairing that trust, it will take years.
Amen. Well, I'm glad you bring this up, and you have this highlighted in your book, because I believe it's one of those undercovered and under-discussed issues that is so foundational to any relationship. Because I find when people, when there is a breach of trust, wow, I mean, it blocks everything. I mean, to the point of somebody just asking you to pass the ketchup, that's a problem. You know? It just gets so ridiculous, and as you said before, it just kind of builds up, and this resentment comes in, and then it becomes a fait accompli, and what's at the expense here? We're talking a marriage, we're talking family, we're talking all kinds of dynamics that are involved here. I want to go back to your conflict personality, and if you can break that down, we've got the competitor, the accommodator, the avoider, the compromiser, and the collaborator, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Run that down. Tell us what that looks like.
So very quickly, the competitor is there are two dimensions when you look at the results and you get to these five personalities. There are the dimensions of problem solving and the dimension of relationships. So which of these two things do you care about more? And the competitor is someone who just cares about winning, even if it comes at the expense of the relationship. They care about solving the problem or winning or whatever the case may be. The accommodator cares more about the relationship. So they're willing to get to they don't really care about whether their needs are met. They just care about maintaining that relationship. Mm-hmm. The avoider doesn't really care for much that much. Doesn't care for either that much. The compromiser thinks, well, I care about both, but I care about them only a little bit. The collaborator, which is what I call the high leverage behavior of effective conflict resolvers, wants to maximize both and thinks that there's a better way to do it. And the classic orange story that you may be familiar with is a great example, a very simple example to illustrate the collaborator. So two sisters are quarreling over an orange, and the rational result you may think would be to cut it in half so they each get half of it. Mm-hmm. But the collaborator would say, well, why do you want the orange? And the one sister says, well, I want to drink the juice, and the other one says, well, I want the skin because I want to bake a marmalade cake. And so they each get 100% of the orange for the reason that they wanted it, as opposed to 50% of it. There's no value left on the table, and there's no resentment because each of them got exactly what they wanted. So that's the high leverage behavior of the effective conflict resolver. All of us should aim to learn the tools of what's called interest-based negotiation in order to be able to problem solve more effectively.
Exactly. And as you mentioned earlier, this is a bit dynamic. So in certain cases, we might find ourselves being one of these personalities versus the other. But the ultimate goal is maybe in all cases to be a collaborator and think in terms of, as I said earlier, in terms of win-win.
That is absolutely right. That's the end goal, is to try to maximize the solving the problem without leaving any value on the table, but at the same time doing it in a way that doesn't build resentment, doesn't erode trust. And so apart from the simple example that I gave, you bring on all of the tools that are in the book about assertion, about empathy, and how you display that, and how you can dial up your assertion or dial down your assertion or dial up your empathy as needed. Mm-hmm. And you can be quite strategic about it, and it can actually be quite fun once you're able to look at it from above.
Well, in your book, you address resolving conflict at work and home. Share some tips with the audience about resolving some conflicts at work.
Well, it's the same thing, for instance, let's say that your coworker stole, you had an idea, you led in a project, and your coworker sort of took the credit for it. And, let's say that sort of led to a conflict dynamic. You need to be able to say to yourself, well, how do I approach this coworker that just did this to me? First of all, you've got to use your assertion skills. The silence about letting someone else take credit for the work you did is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. So you confront this coworker, but then you have a plan B in your hands. You have an alternative plan even if you invite them to the to the game of assertion, that if it doesn't pan out, if it doesn't work the way you want, you would then, then I talk about consequence in the book. Let's not kid ourselves. Without the shadow of consequence, some conflicts will never conclude.
Exactly.
So, you execute your plan B, but always keep in mind it's not about punishing that person. It's about doing what's right.
And what's being done in terms of what's right is win-win, because now you have a person who maybe was blinded to that that issue or that particular behavior, and they have an opportunity to change their behavior and be a better employee with other team members, right?
That's right, because your first step is to confront them directly. You're not mm-hmm. going to go behind their back. You're going to confront them directly, and because you're going to have the tools to do it, you're not afraid to do it.
What do you want, for us readers to realize about conflict after reading your book?
Well, I want everybody to know that you're absolutely able to. Do not fear conflict. You can transcend conflict. This perversion of conflict and all the negative connotations is not healthy. We have to relate to each other in better ways, in healthier ways, and there is a better approach, a better framework that's built on the three dimensions that I talked about, and all of us should become skillful at them. We should dispel destructive emotions, and we should move towards problem solving.
Amen. Meja Malecki, a family lawyer, author of the new book, The Conflict Resolution Grail, will be linked on our website at BillMartinezLive.com. Thank you, Meja.
You know what's really smart?
Wash your hands frequently, practice social distancing, and stay home if told to do so.
You know what's really dumb?
To ignore your immune system.
Right now, more than ever, your health depends on a strong immune system.
The experts at Immunocorp will give you their 7-step guide to immunity for life, free.
Why? Because we want you to be smart and healthy.
Simply call 800 400
206-3063 or click immunityforlife.com.
ImmunoCorp has been producing the world's leading immune system products for more than 2 decades.
To get your free 7-step guide to immunity for life, call 800-446-3063. 800-446-3063.
Be smart. Don't ignore your immune system. Your life depends on it.
Call 800-446-3063 or click immunityforlife.com. ImmunityForLife.com.